Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Wild Hour. Responsible for the most important problems of our educational service and public interest in the area, George Gordon. The Wild Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain, the Kello case, when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. If you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this Kello case this week. The Kello case, the one in New London, Connecticut, where the Supreme Court answered the question, is this taking of my property and giving it to a private developer for a public use? And the court said, yep, it's a public use. I contended that it was the wrong question. In other words, we went down a rabbit trail. Mrs. Kello did, at least that's my opinion. Now, it could well be that their intention was to raise that constitutional question or that constitutional issue and get an answer to it. And indeed, she got an answer to it. But I would contend that the correct question is, am I getting just compensation? And I said the two key property rights that she had was location and view, and that that's the only piece of real estate in New London, Connecticut, that these developers can use for the purposes that they want. And they're not there to buy the rock, the mineral, the soil, the nails, the boards, and the glass. They can get that down at Home Depot. What they're after is the view and the location. But in the condemnation proceeding, everybody has taken their eyes off of the ball. And that what they're looking at is the physical plant, the rocks, the mineral, the soil, the nails, the glass, and the boards. And everybody has taken their eyes off of the two most valuable assets in that particular piece of property, and that's the view and the location. Now, the Magombo made an observation. Let me share it with you. He said, the outrage over the Supreme Court's Kello versus New London decision to allow a city to force a homeowner to sell his house to a developer has occasioned today's installment of positively poetic justice. He said, to wit, a group of investors has petitioned to have the house of Supreme Court Justice David H. Souter turned over to them to construct a hotel, which they plan to call the Lost Liberty Hotel, and it will also feature a Just Desserts Cafe and Museum, featuring a permanent exhibit on the loss of freedom in America. He said, I love it. Well, now, that's a cute comment on a legal subject. But I would contend that it's a rabbit trail that goes down the wrong direction from where we want to go. Now, I wanted to show you what a rabbit trail was all about. And there's an example of a rabbit trail in an email that I received not long ago that deals with a panther in Florida. Now, this is an article written by Henry Lamb in the Ecologic Powerhouse. Now, the Ecologic Powerhouse is a conservative newsletter. And in the Powerhouse, it says, Panther 1, People 0, by Henry Lamb. It was reported on worldnetdaily.com. So here's the article. Let's run through this article, and let me show you how government uses the rabbit trail to get your mind off of what it is that they don't want you to think about. The last program, I mentioned to you that About 1% of us think. And about 5% of us think that we think, and everybody else has been taught not to think. Here's his article. He says it's wrong. It's just plain wrong for the federal government to force private landowners not only to allow government panthers to roam on private property, but to let the panthers feast on the homeowner's pets. Now, the Third Amendment forbids government from quartering soldiers on private property without the owner's consent. Panthers, however, and other so-called endangered species must be quartered and fed by the landowner without his consent. Jack and David Shealy's petting zoo at their campground near Okeechobee, Florida. Maybe that's spelled or pronounced Okeechobee, Florida, O-C-H-O-P-E-E, Florida, became a buffet table for a radio-collared panther released in the area by the Game Commission. Night after night, the panther jumped the fence into the petting zoo and helped himself to goats, emus, and chickens without the owner's consent. Jack pleaded with the Game Commission to remove the panther, as it had done when another panther pestered pets at a nearby Indian reservation. The Game Commission refused, and then they scolded the Shealys for being in the area in the first place they considered to be panther habitat. Never mind that the Shealys opened their campground in 1971 and never had a problem until the Game Commission decided to release its panthers. Now, a neighbor, Jan Michael Jacobson, he's the director of the Everglades Institute, offered to set up a video camera and then a light and then to try to catch the panther in the act. A videotape of the slaughter, they reasoned, would provide proof positive that the menacing panther should be removed. Now, on the appointed night, the Shealys staked out the goat in their front yard, and Jacobson set up his camera, and they were not disappointed. The panther attacked the goat. Jacobson's camera was rolling. Even as he banged on the side of his camper to scare off the panther, the goat survived. Jacobson and the Shealys, however, were hauled into court for conspiring to commit animal cruelty. Tying a goat to a stake in the front yard is no more illegal than tying a dog to a stake in the front yard. Putting a spotlight on a goat in the front yard is no more illegal than putting a spotlight on the corners of a house. Apparently, both became illegal if a panther attacks the goat. It would not have been illegal, however, had the attacker been a neighbor's dog. The difference is the special rights that Congress has conferred on a wild animal by virtue of the Endangered Species Act. Jacobson cites many specific studies that conclude that the panther is in no way endangered, but it doesn't matter. Once a species has been declared endangered by the government, it is protected, whether it is endangered or not. Had it been a neighbor's dog that gobbled up the Shealy's animals, the neighbor would have been responsible. The neighbor would have had to have paid the Shealys for their loss, and they would have been required to pay damages. Why then is the government not required to pay the damages caused by the government's owned panther? Now, the Shealys were told that they could go to jail for a year and be fined for the offense unless they pleaded guilty. So they did, and they are now awaiting their sentence. Jacobson did not plead guilty. He had done nothing illegal. He simply filmed the panther attack, which he and the Shealys had asked the Game Commission to prevent by simply removing the panther. In the posh resort town of Naples, Florida, a six-member jury listened to Jacobson's attorney explain how none of Jacobson's actions were in violation of any law, and it seemed like a slam dunk for the defense until the pictures from the videotape were shown to the jury. The jury deliberated for 6 minutes and then returned a guilty verdict. The prosecution asked for a fine in jail and an extended probation period, so the judge fined Jacobson $500 and court costs of $260. The wrong people were on trial. The Game Commission should have been on trial for violating the Shealy's private property rights. The jury should have seen photos of all of the slaughtered carcasses of the dozens of privately owned animals that the government-owned panther had killed. And Jacobson believes that he has done nothing wrong, so he's going to appeal. He believes the government is wrong by forcing private individuals to provide food and lodging to wild animals without consent or compensation. He believes that it is wrong to protect an animal as endangered when the same animal is shot as vermin in many places in the world. Jacobson and the Shealys are more victims in the long list of people who have been damaged by the Endangered Species Act, which values panthers, wolves, and grizzly bears above human life. That's the end of the story. This is an article by Henry Lamb. He is the executive vice president of the Environmental Conservation Organization and chairman of Sovereignty International. Well, I agree with Henry Lamb in his conclusions, and politically, I think that Henry is correct. But legally, Henry is incorrect, and he's wrong. And it's a rabbit trail that people have been following for generations now. It's a program, or it's a system that government has implemented to take our property and property rights and to do it legally and to get us to argue politics while the law is used to take our property. Now, I'm going to read this article again and I'm going to comment on it. step by step as we go through it. And I'm going to show you what the legal consequences are. This is a normal, everyday garden variety methodology used by government to take people's property day in and day out. And whether it's the Endangered Species Act or it's OSHA or the EPA or the State Tax Commission or the IRS or any other government agency, the methodology and the modality that's used follows in case after case and has been going on, well, at least during my lifetime. And that's about 75 years, going back to about the 1933 period with Franklin D. Roosevelt. All right, now let's go through and analyze this. Now, Henry Lamb says it's wrong, it's just plain wrong for the federal government to force private landowners not only to allow government panthers to roam on private property, but to let the panthers feast on the landowners' pets. The Third Amendment forbids government from quartering soldiers on private property without the owner's consent. Panthers, however, and other so-called endangered species must be quartered and fed by the landowner without his consent. That's not true. Both of those statements are incorrect. When he says that it's wrong, it's just plain wrong for the federal government to force private landowners not only to allow government panthers to roam on private property, but to let the panthers feast on the landowner's pets, is just plain wrong. It's against the law to do that. Now, what this landowner is unable to do is to bring the government to trial. He's unable to bring the government to test, to task, and to make them pay for the damages that the panther is causing. And the analogy of the Third Amendment forbidding government to quarter soldiers on private property is a characterization which is politically correct but legally incorrect. The Endangered Species Act does not require the quartering of wild animals on this landowner's property. It doesn't require that at all. In fact, the government is just as liable for the deprivations that are done by its animals under its statutes and judgments and enactments as would a private landowner be if his dog did it. But the methodology by which you collect these damages is different. If my neighbor had a Rottweiler that came over and killed my goat, I would sue him in my local state district court for a tort claim. But this claim is not a tort claim. This is a takings action under eminent domain. And that's why these people can't get a remedy. Let's continue. Jack and David Sheely's petting zoo at their campground near Ochopee, Florida, became a buffet table for a radio-collared panther released in the area by the Game Commission. Night after night, the panther jumped the fence into the petting zoo and helped himself to goats, emus, and chickens without the owner's consent. Each one of those goats, I'm going to make a comment here, each one of these goats, emus, and chickens, then, is a damage. Now, typically, the requirement in law is that you have to prove that it's the government's panther and that it's not your neighbor's Rottweiler. After all, the government doesn't have to pay for the damages caused by your neighbor's dog, do they? Any more than your neighbor should pay because you claim it's the Rottweiler, when in reality it's the panther. All right, so now we have to prove, our burden of proof is to prove that it's the government and it's the government's panther that is taking these animals. So we need to photograph the animals that have been killed. And then that becomes evidence. Those are called exhibits. And we have a duty. We have to be able to prove every material fact and allegation that we're making. So if we're claiming that their panther killed three emus, then we need pictures of three emus. If we're claiming that they killed six chickens, three emus, and five goats, then we need pictures of the chickens, the emus, and the goats. We need to document each one. And then we need to be able to document what the value of these animals are. Now, an emu may have a value of, let's just say, $100. But an emu in a petting zoo that can be petted by little children may be worth $200, $500, or $1,000. It may be worth a whole lot more money than just a wild emu that you can look at through the fence. There might be a lot of time, effort, and energy in training this emu, in breaking this emu. Like a wild horse on the range has a value, but that same wild horse broken to be ridden horseback or broken to pull a wagon or broken to do farm chores or something can be worth a lot more money. So it's up to us then to document the loss. All right, now the next item over here. Jack pleaded with the Game Commission to remove the panther. I'm going to pause right there. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. Would you go over to your neighbor and plead with him to tie up his dog? There's a difference between making a request and making a legal demand. When you go to somebody and you plead with them, then there's a request. If you go to somebody and you make a demand, then there's a legal obligation that attaches to the demand. There's no legal obligation with a request. Going to the Game Commission and saying, would you please tie up your dog? Would you please tie up your panther? It does not have the same consequences as a legal demand. I wouldn't have asked the Game Commission. What I would have done is I would have made a legal demand upon them to pay me for the damages that they had done. Pay me for the damages. Now, I don't care whether they pay me or not. If they don't pay me, I'm going to go sue them. If they do pay me, well, then I don't have any reason to sue them. Now, let's put it this way. Let's suppose that the panther comes in and eats a goat. and you write up a legal demand and you send it by certified mail to the Fish and Game Commission, and you say that goat's worth $300, and they send you a check for $300. Okay, so now what's your complaint? The panther comes in, kills an emu, you send them a letter and you say that the emu is worth $300, and they send you $300. What's your problem? What's your damage? What's your complaint? As long as the government keeps paying you for these animals, there's no problem. The problem develops when you make a legal demand and they don't pay you. Now we have a cause of action. When you call somebody on the phone and say, would you please tie up your dog? You don't have a legal action. You don't have a damage. All right, going on, the Game Commission refused, and then they scolded the Sheelys for being in the area that they considered to be panther habitat. All right, let's pause right there and let's think about this for a second. Let's suppose you called your neighbor and you said, listen, your dog came over here and killed one of my goats. And your neighbor scolds you and says, wait a minute, you crazy lunatic fringe, you're in my Rottweiler habitat. How do you think that would play out? Can you see how preposterous that is? Now, you got to remember that when you're dealing with government, the government is made up of human beings. Government is made up of people. Some of the people that work for government are stupid. Some of the people that work for government are lunatic fringe. They're insane lunatics working for the government, carrying out government policy. But that doesn't make it legal, lawful, moral, ethical, right. Now, if I went in and I said to somebody, your Rottweiler came over and killed one of my goats, and he said, you crazy fool, it's your fault for being here. You should get the hell out of Florida. You should go to Wisconsin, you fool, and have your petting zoo up in Wisconsin. Now, that's an insane claim by somebody who's caused me a damage. So I guess we have to treat them like they're insane, don't we? Never mind that the Sheelys opened their campground in 1971 and never had a problem until the Game Commission decided to release its panthers. Irrelevant and immaterial when the Sheelys got there. They could have moved in last week. They have just as much right to their petting zoo. They have just as much right to their goats and emus, whether they've been there for 30 years, 10 years, 2 weeks, 2 months. Now the Sheelys are complaining that the government has a radio-collared panther. Furthermore, this panther cannot be killed. See, if your dog comes over on my farm, I just shoot that SOB, and that's the end of it. Now, the government comes along and they enact a law called the Endangered Species Act, and they say, if you kill that panther out there, we're going to punish you. Okay, well then you can't kill that panther. See how simple that is? You can't kill the panther. But does that mean that the government's panther can come in and kill your goats and eat them, and they don't have to pay for them? You know, there's an old adage in law. This old adage is called a maxim of law. There cannot be a wrong without a remedy. Every wrong has to have a remedy. And there's a remedy for this. It's called a takings action. But you can't sue the government. You can't plead with the government and send them letters and say, be reasonable. Government sometimes isn't reasonable. Not because the government or not because the laws aren't reasonable, but because the people that are implementing those laws are unreasonable. I mean, you can have some greenies in here. You can have some PETA nuts in these government positions here. And, you know, that's the breaks of the game. And you have to deal with that. You have to be smart enough to deal with a government bureaucrat. And I think what's going on in America is that Americans have been dumbed down to such a degree that they're unable to deal effectively with a lawless runaway government. Okay, now, that doesn't mean there's not a remedy. Doesn't mean there isn't a way to handle this. Now, going on, a neighbor, Jan Michael Jacobson, director of the Everglades Institute, offered to set up a video camera and light to try and catch the panther in the act. That's a good move. That's a good move. What we want is evidence and videotape of the slaughter. They reasoned would provide proof positive that the menacing panther should be removed. Good thinking. That's a good move. So on the appointed night, the Sheelys staked a goat out in their front yard, and Jacobson set up his camera. And they were not disappointed. Well, let me ask you this. Did you put the goat out in the front yard for the express purpose of harming the goat or catching a criminal? I don't know what the intent is here, but evidently, need a picture like this. Let's suppose you needed bait. And so you took your 18-month-old son or daughter out there and staked him in the front yard. Would we then say, if we deliberately staked a child in the front yard to entice the panther to come into the yard and attack the child, would we say that that was child endangerment? See, I think the average person would say, oh my God. Could we have accomplished the same thing had we used a piece of beefsteak? Could we have accomplished the same thing, let's say, with a chicken or something else? Not that he's violating the law with the goat, if in fact this goat is property. But I'm going to show you what the government's doing here. The government is going to take everybody's mind off of the panther and put the mindset of everybody on this goat and on the Sheelys. The government is getting caught now. It's kind of like a story that went around. This guy was getting his house broken into several times, had been broken into. So he set up a shotgun aimed at the front door with a string and pulleys and so on, so that when you open the front door, the shotgun would go off and kill or shoot or hit somebody coming through the door. And sure enough, this guy broke into the house, came through the front door, the gun went off and shot him, and he sued this homeowner. and he collected damages. Now you'd think, you know, hey, wait a minute, this is wrong. This is my home. Well, you know, it could be that a guy had broken down alongside the road, and he needed to go up and use a telephone. Nobody was at home, so he had to break into the house to use the telephone because perhaps somebody was injured in his car and he needed help. He needed to call 911, and you can't set up a booby trap that will potentially harm or kill people because, you see, the penalty for breaking and entering is not death. There's a penalty for breaking and entering. There's a penalty for burglary, but it's not killing people. So this homeowner has used the wrong methodology to protect his property. Same thing applies with killing people. Let's suppose that some guy is breaking into your house and you say, well, I've had enough of this, and you shoot and kill him. That's manslaughter. The penalty for breaking into your house is not death. The only time that you can kill somebody is when you are in honest, earnest fear for your own life. Now, somebody breaks into your house, you turn on the lights, he's carrying a gun, he points the gun at you, you shoot first and kill him. Now you've got self-defense. Now, there's ways to do things and there's ways not to do things. All right. Now, he's right. He hasn't broken any law here. The panther attacked the goat. Jacobson's camera was rolling, and even as he banged on the side of his camper to scare off the panther, the goat survived. Jacobson and the Sheelys, however, were hauled into court for conspiring to commit animal cruelty. Now, here's their mistake. Once they got the pictures, they had the evidence that they needed. The first thing they should have done is to file an action against the Fish and Game Commission and the named officials in a takings action, so that if the government then were to charge them with animal cruelty, they could go in with a plea and abatement and abate the proceeding in the lower court until they got the decision out of the upper court, which would have been the takings issue. Now, the government used their head. They said, well, wait a minute. Here's this guy's got a video camera. He goes out here and he catches us red-handed. What are we going to do to defend ourselves? Oh, I know. Let's charge this guy with animal cruelty. Let's take the spotlight off of us. Let's take the spotlight off of the government and the Fish and Game Commission. And let's put the spotlight on the Sheelys. And let's spotlight them as being cruel to animals by staking their goat out so that the panther will attack the goat. Because obviously there was a statute that prohibits you from staking a goat out so that you can watch alligators come out of the lagoon and come up onto your lawn and eat them. I mean, you know, there are people that do things like that. There are people that fight chickens, you know, and there are people who would stake an animal out on the front lawn because they know that an alligator is living out here in the canal and the alligator will come up and that they can sit there and they can watch that. And so the PETA people went to the legislature and said, that's cruel and unusual and we need laws to prevent that. And so what happened here was the Sheelys fell into the trap. Could you have used some other means other than the goat? I got to take a break here and give you a couple of reminders, and when I do, I'll come back and I'll show you how that was done one time up in New Hampshire. So let me write down New Hampshire here, and it's called Passover. Hang on, I'll be right back, and I'll show you another one of these government traps over here and how to beat it. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log and schedule and archive. It can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free CD package, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. To order yours, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate, and that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour. And vice versa. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about rabbit trails. Now, the initial case that we're discussing here is called Kello, K-E-L-O, which is an eminent domain case up in New London, Connecticut. But I was giving you an example here of a story of a guy down in Florida. And this guy in Florida now, he's trying to catch a panther in the act of attacking his petting zoo animals. He does. He succeeds. He gets the pictures. And then the Fish and Game Commission, seeing that they've been caught red-handed, pulls a renvoi and charges him with animal cruelty. So you should be aware of and you should be prepared for the government and their defense, which is going to be to attack you. Now, I had a student up in New Hampshire one time, and he was doing the Passover. And he had a little girl. He was divorced, and he had a little girl. And during Passover, he had custody of a little girl. She's about 8 years old, and so they were doing the Passover. And then when the little girl went back home after the Passover was over, she told her mother what she had seen. Well, what did you do with Daddy? Well, Daddy took this little lamb and cut his throat and spread the blood on the lintels and doorposts of the house, and then they cooked the lamb in the barbecue, and we ate the lamb. This is called a ritual sacrifice. So the mother, you know, these divorced people are like this. This mother decided that she wanted to use this event to get at her ex-husband. And so she went to the, PETA people or the prosecuting attorney or somebody, and they charged this father with animal cruelty. Animal cruelty. So the guy called me on the telephone. He says, well, I've been charged with animal cruelty. And he told me this little story over here. And I said, okay, well, why don't you go code plead that out and find out what is animal cruelty in New Hampshire? What constitutes that? So he did, and he went to the Department of Agriculture statutes, and how do you butcher a lamb? How do you kill a lamb in New Hampshire? And sure enough, by cutting their throats. And so the standard methodology for killing a sheep in New Hampshire is to cut its throat, which is exactly the way you kill a Passover lamb. And so he went into the lower court, and he didn't demand a jury trial. In fact, he filed a motion to waive jury trial. And then he came in with a motion to dismiss in a motion for a preliminary hearing, to argue just the issues of law, not the issues of fact, not did I kill the lamb, not did I practice the Passover, not is this animal cruelty, but whether or not the statutes of New Hampshire prescribe how a lamb is to be killed in New Hampshire. Now notice here, these people demanded a jury trial. Why would you want a jury trial in this case of potential animal cruelty? Think about that. Well, most people would say, well, I want a jury trial because it's the American way. Well, that may be true. And jury trials are certainly constitutional and are certainly prescribed. But, you know, a jury trial only decides the facts in the case. So when the state charged this guy with animal cruelty, staking an animal out to be attacked by a panther, would be about the same as staking an 18-month-old child out on the front lawn to attract the panther. We would charge you, if you did such a thing, with child neglect or child endangerment, wouldn't we? Why would you want a jury trial? What you want here is a bench trial with a motion to dismiss to raise just one issue. Are the actions that I'm taking, are they legal, are they lawful, are they constitutional? Because when a charge comes down, there's only two ways that you can resist these allegations. It's either you're going to plead or demur. Now, if you plead, you're saying, in effect, I deny that I did this. Well, how in the hell are you going to deny that you staked the goat out on the front lawn to attract the panther? What you want to do is demur. You want to waive the jury trial and come in and say, well, of course I put the goat out on the front yard. That goat is my property, and I have a right to stake that goat out on my property. That's a legal question, not a factual question. And it takes away from the jury. It takes away from these people on the street over here who are not able to make legal decisions anyway. Juries can only make factual decisions, not legal decisions. Then you drop that case in the hands of the judge, and that's what happened in New Hampshire. As a matter of law, the New Hampshire legislature says that sacrificial animals are exempted from the legislature's prescriptions concerning cruelty to animals. They're outside the law. It's something that's totally different. It comes under the First Amendment. The First Amendment prohibits government from impairing your obligations concerning your First Amendment rights to religion and religious free exercise. Same thing is true here. Now let's go on to the next paragraph. You see, tying a goat to a stake in the front yard is no more illegal than tying a dog to a stake in the front yard. That's right. As a matter of law, that's correct. But the jury looked at that and said, as a matter of fact, it violates the statute. Putting a spotlight on a goat in the front yard is no more illegal than putting a spotlight on the corners of your house. As a matter of law, that's true. But in the context, factually, of these circumstances, the jury could construe that as being animal cruelty. Why give a jury the opportunity of construing that to be animal cruelty when, in fact, you have a legal right to put a spotlight out, a legal right to stake a goat out, and a legal right to gather evidence of a crime that's being committed against you? As a matter of law, this guy could do what he did. Unfortunately, he handled this legal problem incorrectly. He handled it incorrectly because, number one, when he was charged with the crime, he demanded a jury trial. A jury trial to decide what? Did he or did he not stake a goat out on the front lawn to attract a panther? Which by the statute says that that's cruel and unusual, or that it's a violation of law. Why give the jury that opportunity? Going on here, the difference is that the special rights Congress has conferred on a wild animal by virtue of the Endangered Species Act. That's true. Congress is God. Congress makes law. Congress is sovereign. Congress has decided that we will have panthers. Okay. So what this amounts to is the same takings problem that you've got in the Kellogg case over here. New London, Connecticut says, we're going to take your property for the benefit of the public. And Congress has said, we're going to have wild panthers running around, even at the expense of killing every goat in the state of Florida. Well, unfortunately, for the state and the people of the state of Florida, the people of the state have to pay for every goat that their panthers kill, in the same way that New London has to pay for every acre of ground that they take from Mrs. Kellogg. Well, assuming, of course, that Mrs. Kellogg knows how to go in and get just compensation. Based upon what I've seen so far, I'm not sure that she's able to do that. Now, had it been a neighbor's dog that gobbled up the Sheely's animals, the neighbor would have been responsible for the Sheely's loss and required to pay damages. Why, then, is the government not required to pay the damages caused by the government-owned panther? Well, the answer is the government is required to pay. Now, how are you going to make the neighbor pay? Let's suppose that my Rottweiler comes over and eats your goat. And you complain to me and you say, hey, Gordon, your Rottweiler came over and ate my goat. And I say, kiss off. And every night my Rottweiler comes over and eats one of your goats. What are you going to do about it? Well, the only solution that you have is that you've got to sue me for these damages. You've got to sue me for the damages. If you call the sheriff's office and say, Jesus, Gordon's dog is coming over and eating my goats, the sheriff's going to say, well, what evidence do you have of it? Now, there's no endangered species called the Rottweiler Endangered Species Act. But the burden is on you to prove it. Now, they went about this correctly. They went out to prove. They got videotape of the animal. Now, when they got that panther coming in there and attacking that goat, the mistake was let the panther kill the goat and let the panther eat the goat. Kill it and eat it. Just photograph it. Prima facie evidence of the damage and the loss. Why save the goat? What do you care? Now, you go into state court and you sue for a taking. And you come in there with the pictures of all the animals that this panther has taken. In the lower court, you file a motion for a continuance until the issue of property and property rights can be adjudicated in the superior court. That's the way you get paid in a takings action. It's called an inverse condemnation. Inverse condemnation. The government doesn't come in and take your goat, kill it, and feed the panther. The government turns the panther loose, and the panther feeds itself on your goats. Then the government can say, well, it's not our fault. You know, we're not over here taking your goat. It's the panther that's taking your goat. Well, who's the proximate cause of taking the panther? I mean, putting the panther out here to take my goat. And it's the Endangered Species Act. You don't attack the state of Florida. You don't attack the Congress. You don't attack the Endangered Species Act. That's nonsense. That's what Mrs. Kellogg did. She attacked eminent domain. I'm not going to attack eminent domain. I'm not going to attack the state of Florida or the Fish and Game Commission. I'm going to attack the taking without just compensation. And we don't have a taking without just compensation until you first write them a letter and say, here's how much they've taken, here's how much you owe, pay me. When they refuse to pay, the taking is complete. Burden's on you to prove that it was their panther that took it. All you need now is the photographic evidence. They did what they needed to do to get the photographic evidence, and the government did what they needed to do to defend against it. They charged them with cruelty to animals. And now get this. The guy goes in, Jacobson, or the Sheelys were told that they could go to jail for a year and be fined for the offense unless they pleaded guilty. So they did. If you, boys and girls, if you can be so easily coerced into waiving your rights due to your ignorance, well, then you can't claim your rights. And if you can't claim your rights, you don't have any rights to claim. So go right on the back of the bus, fold your hands, sit back, lean out the window, and enjoy the view. The burden is on you. No, I'm not going to plead guilty. I haven't broken any law. You broke the law. Your animal came in and took my property without compensation. And now you've charged me with a crime. And you've charged me with a crime to avoid paying me the just compensation that you owe. Those are called stacked charges. That's unconstitutional. That's illegal. That's unlawful. But, you know, the Sheelys, they couldn't take the heat, so they pled guilty. Well, the minute they pled guilty to the cruelty to animals, now they've destroyed their claim because now they're criminals. It's not the government that's the criminal. It's the Sheelys that are the criminals. You see, they're out here being cruel to animals. Now, you talk about a renvoi. Government does that constantly. I have an old buddy out in Nevada, and the government came out and took his property. And then they charged him with trespassing on government property and then prosecuted him and found him guilty. He had to go to appeal. Ultimately, when he got through with this, he ultimately won the case. But it's a pattern of behavior that is used by government and government agents and government agencies that I know of for the past 75 years. When the government gets caught, stealing your property, they charge you with a crime, and then get you to plead guilty to a crime that you didn't commit, so that you will then nullify your claim against the government. Isn't that just special? Well, it shouldn't be that way. Well, I don't know whether it should be or not, but let me tell you the way it is. You see, under our common law, pursuant to the Ten Commandments, we had what was called a justice system. The justice system. Today, we have abrogated the Ten Commandments, we have abrogated the common law, and we have replaced it with the Roman civil law, and the legal system that we have today is called the adversarial system. I didn't make it that way. I'm just here to report to you as a reporter that you don't have a justice system, you have an adversarial system. And under the adversarial system, it's a contest. It's a trial by fire. We're going to have a contest, and the contest is between the Sheelys and the Fish and Game Commission. We're not concerned with right and wrong. We're not concerned with ethics. We're not concerned with good and bad. We're just concerned with who is the better gladiator and who can beat who. And the answer is the government can beat the Sheelys hands down because the Sheelys do not have the gonads that it takes to get into this adversarial system. Now, the four justices on the Supreme Court, led by Sandra Day O'Connor, made this observation. I said, this is going to open the door to a series of abusive actions by the rich and powerful against the weak and the powerless. The poor, weak and powerless. I agree. You see, once you have adopted the Communist Manifesto in place of the Ten Commandments, you've adopted the adversarial system in place of the justice system. Under the old justice system, we would have taken a look at this and we would have said, well, good old King Solomon, who do you think should get the baby? And he'd have said, let's cut it in half. And the real mother would have said, oh, no, don't kill the baby. Give it to the other side. And then the king would know which one was the real mother, and then justice would prevail. That was the justice system. Under the adversarial system, we play Terminator. We play power. We play, who's got the power? The power makes it right. You know, that's the way the game is played. I'm just a reporter. Don't get mad at me. Jacobson didn't plead guilty. He'd done nothing illegal. He simply filmed the Panther attack, which he and the Sheelys had asked the Game Commission to prevent by simply removing the Panther. Now, in the posh resort town of Naples, Florida, a six-member jury listened to Jacobson's attorney explain how none of the Jacobson's actions were in violation of any law. Okay, wrong people to be explaining the law to. Wrong people. You explain the law to the judge. The judge decides the law and the jury decides the facts. Now, it seemed like a slam dunk for the defense until the pictures from the videotape were shown to the jury. Well, if the videotapes were shown to the jury, the videotapes or any other pictures could have been shown of the animals that the Panther had killed. Remember, the jury deliberated for 6 minutes and returned a guilty verdict. The prosecution asked for a fine in jail and extended probation period. The judge fined Jacobson $500 in court costs of $260. The wrong people were on trial. The Game Commission should have been on trial for violating the Sheelys' private property rights. You're right. I agree with you, Henry. The Game Commission should have been on trial for violating the Sheelys' private property rights. Well, then why didn't the Sheelys file a takings action against the Fish and Game Commission? That's the action. Now, the Game Commission went to the prosecutor and said, okay, let's prosecute the Sheelys for cruelty to animals, but the Sheelys aren't smart enough to prosecute us for taking their property. I'm not telling you this is right, boys and girls. I'm just telling you this is the way the game is played. The Sheelys don't know how to play the game. They knuckled under. They pled guilty. They gave up and quit. They went to the Fish and Game Commission and said, oh, please, won't you please lock up your Panther? And the Fish and Game Commission said, kiss off. We're not locking them up. If you don't like it, get out. And the Sheelys said, okay, we'll plead guilty. We're sorry, we give up. Under the justice system, that was fine. Under the adversarial system, that's just meat to be devoured. It's nonsense. Well, Jacobson believes he's done nothing wrong, so he's going to appeal. He believes the government is wrong by forcing private individuals to provide food and lodging to wild animals without consent or compensation. He believes that it's wrong to protect an animal as endangered when the same animal is shot as vermin in many places of the world. If he takes that argument into the appeals court, he'll lose hands down. Hands down. You see, the only issues that can be raised on appeal are the issues that are raised to the trial court. That's number one. Number two, the charges against this guy is conspiracy to commit cruel actions against animals. The issue of whether or not this animal is endangered is not at issue. Congress has already declared the animal to be endangered. As a matter of law, panthers are endangered species. I don't care if the Congress were to declare sardines an endangered species and fine you $500 for every sardine that you killed or ate. If Congress declares that sardines are an endangered species, then sardines are an endangered species as a matter of law. It's the end of the argument. And going into court and arguing that that's wrong and that it shouldn't be, okay, politically, I might agree with you, but legally, you're dead meat. You're just dead in the water. And that's a problem that lay people have. They go into court to argue politics. And there's a provision that prohibits courts from entertaining political questions. It's called the political question doctrine. And the courts won't even entertain a political question. So if you want to go into court and argue politics, be my guest. But you'll never win doing that. So if you want to go into court and win, well, then you got to go in with a legal argument. This guy's proper legal defense is, I did not conspire to act in any cruel way to an animal. In fact, I risked my life to save that goat's life. You could win that on appeal, but not with the arguments that he's bringing up. When he says he believes that the government is wrong, forcing private individuals to provide food and lodging to wild animals without consent or compensation, he's dead wrong. It's a takings case, and it's a takings case that has to be argued by the victim, the guy that has lost the property. His role is, he was hired by this guy to come out here and do a job. He did the job, and that's the end of it. He hasn't broken any law, and he can win. But if he goes in there and argues the wrong question, the wrong issue, he will lose. And that's what happened to Mrs. Kellogg. She went in and argued the left side of the issue and lost. Now, sometimes you can go in and argue an issue, and like Rosa Parks, you know, you can go in there and argue this law is unconstitutional. And 10% of the time you can prevail, 90% of the time you lose. If you want to be a consistent winner in court, don't go in there and waste your time arguing that the law is unconstitutional. You go in there and argue that I've suffered a property damage, and because of that property damage, I need to be compensated. And the Fifth Amendment provides for just compensation. Just compensation. Next time we'll take a look and I'll show you how to get just compensation. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call the number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Time's up. Gotta leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time. Same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.